Welcome, everyone, to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built. And we are a member of the 1012 Podcast Network, and you can find all the great coverage of the Big 12 over at 1012network.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends. Wherever you found it, connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. And also, I'd like to remind you, this podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. They are a vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City that specializes in collegiate and hometown apparel. They want you to be the best-dressed fan all year long, so be sure to check out their wide selection of officially licensed collegiate apparel today and show off your school spirit no matter the season. With more than 30 schools to choose from, they've got you covered with all of your collegiate apparel needs, and you can get 15% off any non-sale item by using the code 101215 at checkout. That's TEN1215 at checkout. Shop today over at charliehustle.com. Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh. But my name is Gerald Goodrich. I'm your host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by a man who's about to go on a sabbatical, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
Ready. I am ready for life's challenges, journeys, obstacles, adventures that it is throwing my way. So I am so excited to be here one more time for a little while with you, Gerald, on this very podcast before I take a little breather, a little break, and then come back well-rested and reinvigorated, obviously.
Best thing you could ever do. But Kyle will be gone for a little bit. He'll be back soon. But we're here to talk about something that will be gone for a little bit and back soon. Texas football. Spring game is over the weekend. A lot of fireworks in that one, so we'll talk about all of the funness. We had a lot of action going on over the weekend. Texas won not one, but two conference championships for the week, giving them, I believe, double digits, more than the next couple of teams combined. Softball continues to roll. Baseball continues to defy the odds. Track does some track things, obviously, and we'll close the show out with some BOL. But Kyle, going into Saturday, as I signed up for the last time a free trial to watch Longhorn Network for football, I told myself, I was like, I don't want to write about Arch Manning in my post game. I was doing the three things from the spring game for BON over on the site that I blog for. And I was like, I don't want to write about Arch Manning. Everybody's going to write about Arch Manning. And yeah, everybody wrote about Arch Manning. So big stories from Saturday. And the quarterbacks stole the show. Quinn Ewers, not one of those. He only actually played one series, I guess one and a half series by design. Opening drive, he came out with the ones, had a ball batted at the line, intercepted, returned for a big man pick six. And then Arch ran with the ones following that. And Arch lit the world on fire. Twitter going ablaze. People cleaning out their bookmark. On three personalities talking about Texas doing it the right way at their quarterback room. But let's not forget about the man, the myth, the legend himself, Trey Owens, who actually outbattled Arch Manning. Maybe a portent of things to come. Who knows? But outbattled Arch Manning in this one to lead his squad with a go-ahead touchdown. Three touchdowns for both of those quarterbacks. Both of them threw what could have been a game winner if the other one hadn't been better. But Kyle, the passing game has to be the story of the weekend for me.
Yeah, I think you're right. Right. And this had to be fun for Sark. Like, just to take it back a level, he gave up play calling duties between AJ Milwee on one side and offensive coordinator, obviously, Kyle Flood on the other side. But obviously, we all know Sark usually calls the plays. This isn't a Joe Wickline situation. He just seemed to have a calm about him to sit back and be the best position fan and spectator on the field. Like, you could see him kind of smiling, kind of taking it in from behind the play, giving the refs guff when they got a call wrong to take a long touchdown off the board. Sark is an offensive man first, of course. But yeah, I mean, he had the best seat in the house, and quite a show it was, right? To, first of all, to have a 100-play scrimmage where there wasn't any major injuries coming out of is great news, where there's tackling, like, it's full scrimmage. And then to have, you know, hey, we're not going to play Quinn much. We know what we have there. We're going to play Arch, and we're going to play our freshman, you know, we think incredibly underrated quarterback who's got all the skills to be the next great quarterback at Texas, and Trey Owens. And we're going to let those guys go, and we're going to get some, you know, some walk-ons in there as well. Let them get some reps. We think our receiving core and everything is good enough. They can make anyone look good. And they kind of did. If you're a school that's struggling with quarterback and you're knocking on Cole Lord's door this weekend, no one's upset about it, man. He threads some balls into some windows. But I think, right, it was pretty tremendous. It came down to better probably than Sark could have imagined. He got Arch getting the game-winning drive, like Gerald mentioned, but left too much time on the clock. And then you get your freshman showing up, gutting through, making it, leading his team back through. Like, to get that for both of those guys, again, when they probably, you know, don't have a ton of that post-high school, don't have any of it really post-high school. Arch has played a little bit of college football, but not especially meaningful snaps. So letting them get that in front of the fans in DKR, even though it's a scrimmage, it's still, you know, it couldn't have probably gone any better if you had scripted that to be the final two steps. But okay, that's the kind of long of it. The short of it, Gerald, they both looked incredible. Like, Trey Owens made some throws.
Trey Owens is a dude.
That, like, if that was Quinn Ewers or Arch Manning as a five-star generational once-in-a-lifetime, you're like, there it is. See, that's why everyone's been hyping him up. Again, Trey Owens is underrated. He's a very, very good quarterback who got his fourth star, you know, and deservedly so, and looked great in high school. But the guy, again, is a freshman. Remember, Arch is an early enrollee freshman, had some time picking up Sark's offense. He just went out there and just spun it, just played football, you know, seemed pretty comfortable in the pocket, hit guys in stride on deep balls, made all the throws, like, just looked great. And then Arch Manning looked like everything we hoped he would look like. Again, it's a scrimmage. We've always said don't take too much from spring ball. But if your juxtaposing view of Arch was a little bit of a struggle in last year's spring game, the fact that, you know, not only did he find busted coverages on his first touchdown, but he threw guys open with pitch perfect. He stepped up and climbed the pocket, but didn't get happy feet, looked settled, reared back and threw absolute bullets that, you know, guys caught because it's going to catch it with your face mask. Like, he just put the ball
to you or throw it through you.
Correct. He put the ball on people. And I mean, that's really rewarding because you know what you have in Quinn. You have what you saw in the Big 12 championship. You have what you saw in Alabama. You have, you know, a couple injuries away from Texas's ever 4,000 yard season last year. I'm not worried about that. You know what you have. But when you know, as you've seen injuries each year with Quinn, what you have next in Arch, and you know what you have in the pipeline with Owens, like, that was great. And look, for all the talk about the quarterbacks, a passing game, running backs got in it as well, but it's only as good as the guys you're throwing it to. And I'm not, you know, hyping Thatcher Milton. Good on you, kid. But the actual scholarship wide receivers.
Make him wide receiver one. Do it.
Hey, man, he doesn't look bad. A solid high school defensive back is transitioning wide receiver well. But the receiving core just looks electric. There are guys who can get up and go. And you see where the hype and the excitement comes for this Texas offense.
The combination of, you know, I've been a firm believer for a long time that you can put any schlub behind a good offensive line and they'll be okay, right? Mac Jones comes to mind. That's Sark did that, right? But when you have these generational type talents, which you do have in Quinn and in Arch at this point, and then again, we like, this is a podcast that's always going to hype up Trey Owens because there were five-star quarterbacks that said they weren't going to follow Arch Manning, and then Trey Owens was like, you know what? Let me not only follow Arch Manning, but I'm going to commit early and I'm going to build a class and I'm going to do whatever I need to do and I'm going to hype these guys up. Like, and then Trey Owens went and absolutely dragged them all over the playoffs. And people didn't really buy the Trey Owens hype until he scored 90,000 points and came back from a deficit against Katie in the playoffs, right? So, like, we are Trey Owens believers, but he had the advantage of also, again, and all the quarterbacks in the offense have the advantage of this receiving core is legit. Like, that was the big question, I think, for me coming in. Like, we knew offensive line on the offensive side of the ball. We knew the offensive line was going to be good. We knew the running backs were going to be okay. The quarterbacks, we knew what the quarterbacks were. We didn't know they would be this good. But, you know, when you lose Xavier Worthy and you lose Adonai Mitchell and you lose Jordan Whittington and you lose Jatavion Sanders, you're curious, right? There's a curiosity that springs up. And so the wide receivers looked as good as advertised. Isaiah Bond showed off the speed. He and Quinn Ewers had a little bit of a hiccupy go to it, but you know, he and Quinn struggled to connect, and they'll figure that out. They'll throw over the summer. They've got all fall. It'll be great. But he was targeted 8 times, only caught 3 of them, but those 3 went for an average of 31 yards apiece and a touchdown. DeAndre Moore was also one of the hotly he was 3 for 3, perfect on his day. 3 for 3, 3 targets, 3 receptions, 93 yards, and a score. Ryan Wingo, I think, is probably, of the receivers, the big story, right? Like, Ryan Wingo we heard his name from Sark in some interviews, you know, in spring practice, and we knew Ryan Wingo was going to be a guy. He was a guy who could come in, but he looked every bit of five stars, and it really is frustrating to me that one particular recruiting service cost him being a unanimous five star, because the guy looks every bit of a day one starter, right? In any other year, in any other class, in any other wide receiver room, he is probably your wide receiver two behind Isaiah Bond, or, you know, he's, you know, because he's a freshman, right? But like in any other, he starts in any other wide receiver room. And so again, we have shifted Texas. We've talked about it before. These are the guys that you have to play because you can't keep them off the field, right? Not because you don't have the numbers. That's what Ryan Wingo comes in and does. Jonte Cook, we can't forget about him. Looked good over the middle, contested catches, four receptions, 62 yards. And then Amari Nee Black, four receptions, 37 yards on four targets. So this passing attack looks like it has officially reloaded. And I think adding Bond at the top end really helps. But the guys that were already on campus, you know, more Wingo Cook really showed out for themselves as well.
Yeah, I hope Golden gets his chance as well. He, you know, showed some of the speed on a kick return, which those were non-contact, but I hope he gets his chance as well. He didn't really see him show out a ton, but Nye Black, the tight end who came in, looked solid in his time. Jordan Washington actually looks the part. He can run. He goes and gets it. He's probably put on about 30 pounds, up to like 240 in less than a year. You know, give me skinny 6'5", you know, with big frame guys and get them in a college weight program and watch them turn into absolute monsters. Really like that. But yeah, I mean, it was exciting how deep it was. I don't remember the number they used. Obviously not all of the guys, you had walk-ons and everything else will catch passes, but you know, it was like 20 receivers caught a pass or more. So, you know, it's deep. There's talent, there's speed all over. I think is probably just because of the big touchdowns to Bond and DeAndre Moore is getting a little overlooked. But Jonte Cook, the contested catch that Gerald mentioned, was against Malik Muhammad with perfect coverage for a first down. They needed it on a third down. That's a thing that is a game situation, right? Against Malik Muhammad, who's as good as most cornerbacks in the SEC, at least, right? Like against an SEC level starting cornerback in perfect coverage. Quinn made the throw and Jonte Cook made the strong hands to move the chains towards the sideline, bring it in, secure the ball. Like, he's a playmaker, but he isn't just a Xavier Worthy. I get it, and I break one for 70 yards. He can be every bit of a Jordan Whittington, I move the chains playmaker as well. So I am excited by the depth, right? Just that Sark is, you know, he's been pretty staunch in his past of he wants a 1,000-yard rusher, he wants balance, and he usually, it seems like, uses about four wide receivers in his rotation. I wonder if this year will challenge some of those things, right? The running backs look good too. Give Baxter his flowers for absolutely just destroying our poor friend of the show, Taff, and everyone else on a run. Looked great. Maybe because Bijan was on screen, he was channeling some of our Longhorn legend. But Blue looked great with a solid third down run, a great catch for a touchdown on a Texas route. They looked good in the running game as well. You see the up end, the top end and the upside there. And then, you know, the choice of who sees the field and where the ball gets distributed. This feels legitimately like a good year where you have eight options that all work, right? Like running backs, receivers. Like this could be a deeper rotation, tight ends, like than we've seen in the past. And I think that's a good thing, right? I see that as a positive. I will switch it over just a little bit and say, well, Gerald already talked about the offensive line look good. Defense, I know, Gerald, your question here was big questions coming out of the spring game. And I wonder, as good as the offense was, it's a zero-sum game. It's hard to say what is what. Did you have any concerns with the secondary?
I mean, yes. I think the first big Arch Manning touchdown looked like it could have either been a give the fans something to talk about or yet another botched handoff between zones. And so I'm not sure which one. The pessimist in me is the cornerback got caught looking in the backfield and missed the guy he should have been covering. The optimist in me is like, hey, Sark told them to take a dive so they could get the fans excited. Because the game had been a little boring and frustrated up until that point.
Yeah.
So we'll see which one it turns out to be. But I think that, to me, is a question. I think we saw the edge. The edge has come on a little bit late. Colin Simmons flashed a little bit in that. Texas continues to see attrition from that room. So that's something to keep an eye on as well. But I think the questions I had, I don't have a wide receiver question anymore. Yeah. But I do still have a question about the line in the secondary. And I think the secondary, the good thing about the secondary is that there are a lot of talented bodies that have a lot of positional versatility. So
yeah.
You've got Gilbo who can play nickel and corner. You've got Jahdae Barron, obviously, who can play nickel and corner. You've got
Who wasn't there, should be said, right?
So he'll be there. Was he a groomsman in the wedding? Do we ever get confirmation on that? No. So like, I think there's a lot to still be said because like three key players were not on the field for the defense. So I'm curious to see what that looks like in the fall.
Yeah, and look, I thought all of those play, you know, at least if you look at Barron and you look at Vernon Broughton, there was probably plays where you would have liked them in. You would have liked Jahdae Barron in there. It's tough as a freshman, right? Wardell Mack had some rough plays. Xavier Filsimi had some rough plays. But again, they're freshmen. They're just getting in. Like, they're going to go across the middle and maybe try to get the pick when they should just go for the tackle, right? Those things will get coached out. We'll see some of that. That receiver core is so good that, you know, you're going to get exposed. It's when you put the full force of a Sark offense, right, and you know that's not all the wrinkles, but it's meant to put you in conflict, and you have the horses and the athletes, it's hard to defend. So I'll give some credit there, but Sark said it during the post-game presser that he was not happy with the depth on the defensive line. Now, how much of that was like a good WWE promo that he was cutting? But, you know, there wasn't Vernon Broughton there, and Sadir Mitchell, as big as he is, like, just didn't look in shape and ready, like in fall shape. He got pancaked in the red zone on one play. That guy is huge and has all the tools. He's just got to put it together a little bit, but he's young, very, very young. But the guys who, to me, did look good, Colton Vasek, really looks like the real deal, right? And Colin Simmons can get off the line, you know, with like he shot out of a cannon. So there's some good things to you know, be found on that edge room. I went from we saw some guys transfer out because I think if Vasek is making that jump, if he's making that leap with the talent they have and they've brought in, there probably is, you know, a lack of snaps down the chart there because there's some dudes. It's going to be hard to get a 6'5 guy who moves like that, and Vasek, if he's getting his hands and freeing himself up and just, you know, on the snap being in the backfield, he's going to be on the field. So yeah, I liked what I saw from some of the defense. I thought Manny Muhammad looked good, but there is just still some questions. I think getting that full defense with Barron in there, with Makuba a little bit more settled in, with kind of the experience that they do have, I think you're going to see come fall a little bit different, but it is something to watch, right? The offense is so good, probably as good as that defense will play all year. They're that level of upside. So we'll see, you know, in a couple months. That will be something to watch.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how it works out. But that is the conclusion of football for the 2023-2024 academic season. We'll pick back up with our summer preview series sometime after Kyle gets back from his sabbatical. But that brings us to the part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus and we down the 40. We'll start with the first of two Big 12 championships. The women's golf team, number 11 women's golf, held a 5-shot lead heading into the final round that expanded to 12 strokes on Sunday to get the 9th Big 12 championship of the year and the 8th in the team's history to get some well-earned time off until May.
A really good season that we've watched kind of come into shape all year. Farrah O'Keefe and Lauren Kim, both just exceptional freshmen. Like, this team, we've said it since the beginning, they're young, but they have all the talent to go, you know, if they can just put it together, all the talent to go as far as, you know, the season will take them. They're sitting at number 11, looks comfortable comfortable 12-stroke victory. They led from pole to pole in this one. O'Keefe and Lauren Kim tied for third, both at 3 under. Cindy Sue has really been the big climber, jumped 13 places for 2 under on the day. She's someone who, that was her case in the last tournament. If she's coming on, if they have a third ace to go with these other, again, these are all young players, so if they get hot at the right time, this becomes an even more dangerous team. Again, this year is not really the year they're looking at. It's great to do it. Next year, maybe even the year after, was where this team was building for. So early success has found money. I will take it. Keep stacking Big 12 trophies.
Not going to be able to carry them all on the way out the door. So Texas, again, off until the NCAA championships in May, earn some well time off. What do you do when you, like most people play golf in their time off? Like, what do you do when golf is your thing in your time off? I don't know, maybe play tennis. I don't know, keep it country club. Number 5, men's tennis, won the Big 12 tournament championship as well to double dip because they got the regular season one last week. First time since 2010 that they got both. The tower is lit up right now as we're recording it. Texas absolutely, I mean, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. They kind of cruised through the tournament. Like, it didn't really have much consternation in that one.
Yeah, swept BYU 4-0 to open. Then home team OSU, who's a top 40 team, was their hardest challenge. They did drop a set in that one, 4-1. And then swept number 3 TCU 4-0 on Sunday to claim the tournament. They won doubles in that one. Plus all the singles. Spazieri was tied against the number 10 player. Braswell was leading against the number 8 player when the match was called. So a lot of battles to be had, but pretty much a sound dominant beating. And if you go back and think back, since the narrow 4-3 loss at the beginning of the month on March 2nd to TCU, that we've said it many times, went to a decisive final third set super breaker. It was in Fort Worth. There was, you know, a lot of reasons that it just had to go right for TCU and ultimately went wrong for Texas. The mentality changed and snapped into this Texas team where they said, hang on a minute, this is supposed to be our season. We're a bunch of seniors. We came back for this. What's going on? And Coach Burke has talked about it a lot in what he's seen in the mentality. Even when Oklahoma State got a little run and they got their set, it's just like Texas shut it down. They have that next gear and they're getting it and they're peaking at the right time. They've won 13 straight since that TCU loss. In the 56 sets in the past month, the past 31 days, they have won 52 and dropped 4. One of those was in the Big 12 championship tournament, only one. But I mean, that is dominance. They swept since that loss to TCU 5-0 and now 4-0. So yes, there's some revenge on TCU, but they're taking it out on everyone, and that's exactly the mindset you want as this team heads in and tries to avenge losing the championship last year.
Full on Terminator mode. And we'll find out where they'll be heading or what they'll be doing after their 10th for the school Big 12 title on the year. We'll find out next Monday. The selection show will happen, so we'll see where Texas will play its postseason. On the ladies' side, they fell to Oklahoma State, who is honestly, let's just be real, like probably the best tennis team in the country. Gender exclusive might even be. I'd be hard pressed to pick against them. Fall to Oklahoma State in the Big 12 tournament that was in Stillwater. Opened up with a sweep of Kansas State and then topped OU, which always feels good. 4-2 with them. They actually lost the doubles point and then won 4 singles with that. But Oklahoma State, just the buzzsaw that they are.
Yeah, and look, it's not a question of, are they the best women's team? You know, Gerald's right to frame it that way. Are they the best, you know, tennis team in the country right now? They're dominant. They didn't lose this year. They have not lost. They won the ITA Indoor National Championship. They're the odds-on betting favorite to win the outdoor championship. Like, it just sucks that Texas is having a really good year, but they keep having to play Oklahoma State. That's who knocked them out in the semifinals of the Indoor National Championship and knocked them out of the Big 12, and they're going to have to face them again if they want to get through them to NCAA national championships. Like, it's tough, and I see sometimes how other teams feel when you're good, but you have that, like, you know, OU has been in softball sitting at number one, and Texas has been in many, many sports when they're just that good. And it's like, man, we're really good. We tried, we played really well, but they're just great, and they have a great collection this year. And remember, Texas, the back-to-back reigning national champion. So Oklahoma State has had to sit and watch this, where Peyton Stearns led a team that just dominated everyone. So This is a tough loss, you know, to go down 4-0. It is in Stillwater again, so it's on top of all of that, a rabid home crowd. And of course, Texas got matched up both on the men's and women's side. But yeah, ultimately a tough end to it. But they're a top 10 team who is punching above their weight still, and I think still probably are like a top 5 team as long as they can avoid Oklahoma State and pray someone else knocks them out inexplicably. That's their best path to the big one. But again, they'll find out more, and it's not, this team has it in them. It's not outside of their capabilities. It's just going to take some things falling right to get this all the way to the finish line.
Bad shrimp for whoever serving Oklahoma State. Now, so again, we'll find out next week where they're going to head. Both men and women probably going to host at least something in Austin before having to travel elsewhere after. But again, we'll find out next Monday where all of that is happening. On the diamond, number one team in the nation, Texas softball sweeps Kansas in Lawrence, pushing their win streak to 9. Friday was a 4-2 win. Saturday was an 11-3 win. Sunday was a 7-0 win. Reese Atwood continues to be on a tear. And it's just Texas is cruising right now on the diamond.
Yeah, they're both cruising. Atwood tied the Texas single-season RBI record with their 66th in that Sunday game against Kansas, and is hit a couple home runs on Saturday, a pair of them to be exact, and is 3 home runs shy of that record as well. Really playing well, but this isn't the Reese Atwood show. I mean, the pitching is great. The defense is good. The hitting up and down. Like the Friday game was a 4-2 win, but they needed, you know, they played a little small ball. They had to, you know, they had to manufacture some runs. They had to make it work. The difference is probably a Mia Scott 2-run home run, and she got her 200th career hit on the weekend. So a great milestone for her as well. There's a lot of different ways that Texas can beat you. And again, you saw it Friday with, you know, two good pitching performances. Both Tegan Cavanaugh picked up her 13th win, and then Mac Morgan coming in for the multi-inning save. They gave up some hits, but basically they were 1-for-13 with runners on base. They didn't let Kansas get streaks going, which is what sealed that one. The 11-3 win was obviously the offensive explosion we were hoping to see. 4 home runs in that one, in addition to Atwood. Caden Henry and Katie Simmons each had one. Henry also got her Big 12 leading 20th steal. And then the 7th was a pitching show, right? A shutout. Sitlali Gutierrez, a 7-inning shutout, 4 hits allowed, 4 strikeouts, just looked good. Katie Simmons got a home run in that one. Viv Martinez got her 50th career steal, as well as a 2 RBI double and 2 walks. Looked good all around in that one. The interesting thing on that Saturday game, Gerald, Texas has not lost a game. They're 29-0 when they've scored first. Texas has trailed 11 times after the first inning. They improved from even to 6-5 in those games on Saturday when they went down 1-0 after the first inning to Kansas. They obviously rallied back to win 11-3. It was a pretty sound win, but that's a key thing to watch for this team as they continue out. They're good at everything, but can they avoid those first inning runs when they don't counter and at least go in even and keep it a 0-0 game? Can they avoid getting behind early? That will be key to their run.
The run has continued, so we'll see how it continues for Texas. This week, they've got Nichols on Thursday before a weekend series hosting the Iowa State Cyclones in Austin. Texas on the other diamond, unranked men's baseball, gets a series win against TCU. The heat under David Pierce's seat continues to rise after a midweek cluster against UT Rio Grande Valley, a 17-9 loss to UTRGV. And then they got just stomped on Friday, 5-0. The bats had nothing to do. The pitching had nothing to do. On Friday, TCU won that one 5-0. And then Texas just casually 7-0 on Saturday, 2-1 on Sunday, rallied after David Pierce got ejected for a iffy call on that one. But a win is a win, and David Pierce continues to, I don't know how to, other than like dodge bullets. It's like watching the end of the Matrix at some point.
Teflon Dave. No, I'm gonna call him David Fiend de Semana Pierce, my guy. He does not know how to win weekday games, and I'm counting Friday as a weekday. He loses midweeks, he can't win Fridays, but Teflon Dave just keeps being unfireable because he wins on Saturdays and he always wins on Sundays. Like, it's the weirdest thing ever to just see a team punt Fridays and win series by winning Saturday and Sunday. It's nerve wracking, and you get the fervor of angry fans all throughout the week. I don't know. I don't know how he's doing it. It's a bit inexplicable. Old David Big Weekend Pierce, but it shouldn't be glossed over that the midweek fiasco against RGV, a 17-9 loss to UT Rio Grande Valley, should never happen. It should not happen. Once in 100 years, does a team come in and just beat you? Sure. They had more hit batsmen than they had hits, right? Texas was one away from setting the all-time NCAA record for most hit batters. And yes, a few of those were when they threw Snake Farm out to start the game, but that's who Coach Pierce put in to start the game. And he wasn't the only one who hit batters. He didn't even have the most hit batsmen of any Texas pitcher. Like, it was just I don't want to go too deep on that game because it was just disgusting. Like, it was tough to watch. It was, you know, it was as bad as any loss in you know, Charlie Strong in Kansas or Abilene Christian in the tournament. It's as bad as any loss in any sport. Texas has suffered in the past decade. Like, it has to be said. So then to turn around from that and lose just in dominating fashion, 5-0 to TCU, it looked like it was over. The wheels had fallen off the bus. Here it is. He won't make it out of the weekend. David Pierce is getting fired. And then you turn around and shut TCU out 7-0 on that Saturday game with Ace Boogie on the mound doing his thing, allowed just 5 base runners in his 6 innings. Like, okay, there's something there. We know Texas has the bats when the pitching holds up. Usually they get it going, not Friday, but most games they get it going. And then 2-1, the bats aren't really working, but you finally see LeBaron Johnson showing some of that promise that we knew was there, right? 6 and a third inning, 7 strikeouts, only 3 hits, gave up 1 run, but it's only 2nd win of the season, which is crazy to say. Gage Bohm may be the answer, coming in all these times and getting multi-inning saves by being basically perfect in his appearances, scoreless in this one. I mean, there may be something forming. It's just this team, I don't know how to describe it. Like, they're not out of it. Like, they sit there right now, not out of it, and I don't know how, because they have looked like the worst Texas baseball team that I've seen in my lifetime at various points this season. Like, they've looked disinterested at various points this season. They've looked like they've quit on the coach. And then it'll be one day later, 24 hours later, and they look like a completely different team. So I just don't know what to make of it. And I'm not gonna sit here and waste my breath or our listeners' headspace by trying to pretend like I know what's going on. No one does.
We'll see if Texas – I mean, Texas has a legitimate shot of winning the Big 12 right now, which is ridiculous. So they've got UT Arlington, the day you're listening to this, on Tuesday. And then they've got Oklahoma on the road. If – they can sweep Oklahoma, or, you know, take 2 of 3 really from, if they take 2 of 3 from Oklahoma, or honestly, more importantly, sweep Oklahoma, they'll be in the lead for the conference, right? Which is absolutely dumb to say. Again, probably not going to sweep, but it'll probably be another 2-1, so they'll remain a game behind Oklahoma, but still absolutely ridiculous. On the track, quickly, the track team was back in action over the weekend. It was a split week for them. So the ladies won a bunch of stuff. This was a weird tournament. It was like an elite tournament, so they had some pros there as well. But still, the ladies, Crystal Herpin won the shot. Kayla Garrett won the 4 and 100-meter hurdles. Keandra Davis won the 200-meter. Olivia Howell won the 1,500. And Sophia Kowalski won the C division of the pole vault, whatever that means in these weird mixed-level track meets. On the men's side, Patrick Papari was in the elite division and finished 4th in the shot put. Brian Harris was the runner-up in the 400-meter elite event. He won the 4th place in the 800, but was the fastest collegian on site. Knowlton Shelvin won the 100 and 200-meter. Caleb Cavanaugh won the 400 hurdles. Jeremiah Newby won the discus. Leo Nuge, the Nugenbauer, finished 2nd. Solomon Washington won the wind-aided long jump, which seems silly for me as well. But again, another split week for them. They've got the Pete and Jordan Invitational and the Texas Invitational over the weekend. And then Texas golf, men's golf team, is currently active in the Big 12 Championship. We'll have an update for you on that next week.
All right, Joe, let's take a look at the world through some burnt orange lenses, and we'll start it with the NFL draft. Just a reminder, we won't do too much of a preview, but the draft is kicking off this Thursday, and there are Longhorns aplenty. It's a nice feeling to need to tune in to the first day of the draft to see where Longhorns are getting drafted. It's a nice change of pace and where Texas should be. Watch the first day, watch all the days. Longhorns will be getting drafted.
I mean, we'll probably at least see one, if not two, on the Thursday. I still hate that they have a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Just give me my Friday, Saturday, two-day draft. But that's neither here nor there. But yeah, we probably will see a couple of guys come off the board on the first round, which is great.
It's an awesome, awesome feeling. Another awesome feeling, Scottie Scheffler, just having the month, having the 2 months of his life, of anyone's life, is
nice.
and not to mention has a baby on the way, has that miracle waiting for him. I did see someone tweet that no matter how on top of the world he is, nothing, no matter how many green jackets or millions of dollars you've won, you can't escape the humbling experience of the dad couch in the delivery room. So Scotty and I shall both see soon. But that's all to say, Scotty earned his fourth win in his last five tour starts by winning the RBC Heritage by three strokes.
$16 million in 42 days, 10 wins in 26 months. He is, we don't want to invoke El Tigre, but he's starting to look Tiger-esque. First player since Tiger in 07-08 to record five straight top two finishes. Vijay, the man, the myth, the legend himself, the only other player to have such a run in the past 30 years. So, I mean, Scotty is looking Tiger-esque. He's looking, looking like a cat.
He's the second fastest ever to 10 wins, his 51 starts. It took Tiger 59 starts to get to 10.
Second Tiger.
So there you go. He's the first Masters.
Second trees. Ha, it's back.
Anytime we get a chance. The first, yeah, this should count towards the Director's Cup somehow. The first Masters winner since 1985 to win the following week. Like, I don't think that's exclusively because you're just partying over the fact that you won the Masters. I think there's just a huge letdown in come down. And not everyone competes in the immediate next week. You're going to take a little time off, but not Scotty. Scotty's getting his rounds in before he has to take paternity leave. I don't know. But getting his rounds in, just kind of showed up, played like nine practice rounds, had a meh kind of opening at day, and then just absolutely gassed past everyone once he got the feel for the course. Just crazy how what other level he's on right now. I said the first Masters winner since 1985. He's the first in general to win in the week immediately following a major, winner, to win a major, then win the next week since Tiger in 2006. I saw a tweet, and I apologize, I can't credit who this was. I don't recall off the top of my head. But the distance between Scotty in the world rankings, between Scotty at number one and Rory McIlroy number two, is further than Rory to number 764 in the world right now, who's Tiger Woods currently. Rory is closer to Tiger than he is to Scotty. It is Scotty's world, and no one else is living in it. He's just so, so good right now at his craft. And yeah, I love it for him. He's crushing it. One bit of news here. I hope she crushes it all weeks, except one. We have a Texas women's basketball transfer. Deanna Gaston will be playing the Longhorns in the future as she transferred to Auburn, reuniting with head coach Johnny Harris, who you'll probably remember was a associate head coach for Vic here in Gaston's freshman season. So it's like we say many times, we hope you go and just crush it in all weeks, except when you play us.
All games, but I guess two next year.
That's true. That's true. That's fair. Gerald, interesting. I'm curious to hear your thoughts. The kickoff time was announced for Texas-Michigan for the 2024 September game in Ann Arbor. It is officially, and maybe not surprisingly since it's on the Fox vehicle, big noon kickoff where they will center their whole program around it, and it will be probably their biggest big noon kickoff of the year. How are you feeling about a giant, enormous, one of the games of the season happening at noon?
I mean, it's a Big Ten game, so they all play early, right? Like, it is what it is. I mean, I won't have to be anxious all day is something that I appreciate about it. But I know, I think I think people are making too much out of it. I'm a college football is in the afternoons kind of guy. Like, give me an 11 or a 2:30. I'm fine with it. I think it's fine. I mean, do we want it under the lights? Sure, whatever. But, like, I think people are going to tune in for this regardless.
I think you're right. This is only... I didn't realize as I was reading this, this is the second ever meeting between number one and number four winningest programs of all time. You'll probably very much remember the first one when at that point, Vince Young just had a good Rose Bowl. It didn't become Vince Young is the absolute governor, colonel general, owner of the Rose Bowl, collects rent on that thing. That came a year later when he did it twice, but his first Rose Bowl, which shouldn't be forgotten, still a great DVD to watch, almost 200 yards rushing and four touchdowns on the ground from Vince on that one. An incredible game, but that is the only time they've met Texas with a 1-0 lead in this series. A bit of news to close this out here. Bob Bowman in Texas Swimming names Eric Posgay as the men's swimming assistant coach, concluding a two-year stint with USA Swimming, where he served as the national junior team director and national coach.
I mean, he's got 20 years of coaching experience, 4 years working alongside Coach Bowman. So, like, there is a lot of history, a lot of familiarity. And again, Texas just gets the best coaches, especially for the natatorium.
Gerald, how many cities have you lived in? Is it like, can you quickly have an answer to that, or is there a lot?
No, it's not. For most military brats, it's not a whole lot. I was born in Virginia, moved to Japan, moved to Shirts, moved to Austin, moved to Oklahoma City, and now I'm back home. So six.
One of those being double. So we'll call it five, right? Because Shirt's twice. So five. Okay. Not bad. I thought you might be, with military, might be a bit more. So I've only lived in four, similar to the Shirt's, the Austin, Houston, where I'm at now, and one in between when I was a kid from Shirt's. My dad's work took him back to Pennsylvania, where he's from, and then back to Shirt's. So just a few years. But I lived in Allentown, Pennsylvania, one of the four cities I've ever lived in. Don't remember it too well as a young kid. I know there's it's not a Springsteen. I think it's actually a Billy Joel song about Allentown. Maybe both. Who knows? But I was excited to see Eric Posgay, native of Allentown, Pennsylvania. So another connection point when we surely get him on the podcast at some point. Come on down. And that's a new face on campus. We have a new one to talk about in the transfer portal of football, but we're going to talk about a couple first who made their way out. We knew offensive lineman Peyton Kirkland had left, but we've already gotten his destination committed to Colorado. Hot off the presses, running back Savion Redd joining him, as well as walk-on running back Kai Woods, and then a couple defensive linemen, Zach Swanson and Jamon Tapp, who, Gerald, I know you'll have some thoughts about him, but what do you think about that overall group heading out?
It makes sense for all of them. I'm a big, you're never going to hear us on this podcast be upset. Like, we're upset when kids leave because we like them. I think they could be assets to the team, but I'm never going to be mad about Savion Redd, who's probably seeing himself slide down the running back rankings. There were rumors that he came into camp overweight. So there's just there's a lot playing into it. The defensive line rooms continue to get more and more crowded. Peyton Kirkland wasn't going to see the field. He probably walks on to Colorado as one of the five best linemen they got.
Yeah.
So, like, it sucks, but I think it's good that Texas is in a position to not have to keep culture guys around, that the culture is so strong. Cause, like, Savion Redd, Jamon Tapp are both culture guys for them. They're guys that really kind of set the tone. And I think that the culture is really strong at this point. And so I'm sad to see those guys go, but again, we'll be fans of theirs wherever they end up.
Yeah, Red definitely had that dog in him, and Tapp, a guy who Gerald has just repeatedly noted is
Gold Front, baby.
We are Gold Front. I'm not gonna say deficient. We just need to see someone step up. So I don't know. Again, maybe that's Trey Owens, maybe that's Arch Manning. I don't know. Someone needs to step up and keep the Gold Front count, as our guy Jamon Tapp, who also had the great quote at the All American game about if you're not at Texas, where are you gonna be? Tough to lose those guys. You're right with culture, but that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that, Gerald. It's hopefully the sign is Texas culture is so strong that it survives without the guy. So like that view of it. Now, speaking of the guy, Gerald, we do have a transfer in, and by God, he sold me tires in 1997. That's right. I'm talking about Bill Norton, former Arizona
Chevrolet.
Like, yeah, I mean, yes, I obviously go to Bill Brasky, but it's not just that. Like, Bill and Norton as a combination, we now will have a defensive line that includes an Al or an Alfred, either way you want to go, and a Bill. This sounds like either an elite bocce ball team or a just absolute national champion defensive line. Excited to get Bill Norton following his coach, obviously, Nansen from Arizona. Big get for Texas.
Yeah, Texas looks to be dipping into the transfer portal for D tackles. There's probably going to be a couple more names when we talk about this next week. And before we move on, Kyle, hot off the presses, football wasn't the only team that got a transfer.
Oh?
Vic Schaefer and the ladies basketball team. If you are a fan of women's basketball, you may know this name. Layla Fela, who was an all-conference player in the Big Ten last year for Michigan, led Michigan in scoring with 17 points per game and 4 rebounds, announced her transfer to Texas literally like right before we started recording.
I will take it. I had not seen that. Keep them coming. That's fantastic. And that concludes the Burnt Orange Lenses. Gerald, let's take it over to a little Godzillatron. What are you watching on your giant screen?
Yeah, so I continued rewatching or watching through some anime stuff. Dragon Ball Z is where I'm at right now. There's a new one called Kaiju Number 8. I'm not always the guy who dives in on like brand new stuff, but it looked interesting. The first episode was last week, and it was pretty fun. I finished The Fires of Vengeance, which is the second book in what's called the Burning Cycle. It is that African-inspired fantasy book that I raved about on my Twitter and probably a month ago. Read the first one. The second one, just as good. The author does this really interesting thing where occasionally he will, like, the books are told in, like, a third-person omniscient narrator, and then occasionally they will switch to a first-person perspective of, like, somebody else in the story, like one of the villains, one of the antagonists, and it is like really, really good. It does a lot of things. And then after I finished that, I wanted to, it's Arab American Heritage Month in the United States, and I wanted to celebrate by reading some books and things by Arab American authors. Gunmetal Gods, I actually Googled like best fantasy books by Arab American authors, and this book is called Gunmetal Gods, and I posted the cover of it on my Twitter. It looks incredible. And like, again, I'm a big fantasy reader, and I like hearing and seeing worlds that are not based out of like Arthurian legend or like, you know, your classic Eurocentric stuff. Like, this is very Middle Eastern based. Like, instead of a king, it's a shah, and there's all sorts of cool stuff, and there's just like little tweaks to the normal stuff that you expect that I really appreciate. But it is real good so far. It is right up my alley. It's a holy warrior searching for his daughter. Like, dad stuff and holy warriors is like my bread and butter.
I like it. That sounds, if you, someone would have given me that description, I would have said, send it to Gerald. That sounds like you. So I watched, I've been saving it. I can't finish it. I can't bring myself to finish it, but I watched the penultimate episode of Reservoir Dogs. And I cried. I won't spoil anything, but I'll just say there's an Ethan Hawke in it. And man, it was just one of the best. There have been some moments in this third season that have wrecked me, but that may have been the most brutal. If you've seen that show, you understand the character arc that the one of the main characters, Alora, goes through, and what this means with this father figure. And I won't spoil in case anyone hasn't seen it, but man, that was I stopped. I've read some recaps. I've just I don't want to be done, and I also want to marinate in this like a full week before I go on and close out and finish the show. So I haven't watched the finale. I'll report back. But man, just so unbelievably good. I think I watched 7, 8, and 9, or maybe just 8 and 9. I can't recall this week. But yeah, that ninth episode of season 3 is as good as advertised for the whole show. And then to juxtapose it, I watched something that was as bad as advertised called Argylle on Apple TV. Gerald, have you heard of this?
I've heard of it. I refuse to watch it.
It's probably the correct call. My wife put it on because I was working, and she's like, this way you won't watch it. You won't be distracted. She loves bad films more than I do. Like, she has a genuine affinity for bad films. She often wins at the pick the lowest Rotten Tomatoes film that you actually enjoyed game. That's a party game. But Argylle, when you look on the surface of it, should be pretty good. It's like a spy action comedy that is flipped on its head. It's very tongue-in-cheek and winking at the genre. It's a satire. It should be good. Bryce Dallas Howard, Sam Rockwell, and then the kind of supporting cast, incredible, of Bryan Cranston, Henry Cavill. Dua Lipa gets in there. John Cena, Samuel L. Jackson. Like, just some absolute names. It's not good, man. It tries too much by about half. Like, it's 150% trying too hard. Just give me 100%. Like there was things I liked. John Cena is always lovable. Like, there, you know, I think Sam Rockwell should be in all movies. Like, he's just a joy when he's on screen in anything. But it just, like, it's 3 hours long. It's like a convoluted plot that doesn't need to be this serious. Like, they just, like, Apple clearly spent a lot of money for the cast and for the locations and for whatever. And they just made a bum of a film. I won't go any further roasting it. Like, again, you have Bryan Cranston and you have all these people who are just great to see on your screen, and this is what they do with it. If you want to watch, it's fine. I mean, it's there's some moments that are like, ha, and, you know, some action scenes that are fine and whatever, but it's like, you could do a lot better. Like, Fast and the Furious has nailed this genre. Of like the tongue-in-cheek action film comedy genre, and this just, it ain't no Senator, you ain't no Fast and Furious.
I mean, it looked like something I was gonna skip. It looks like I got that in the Bureau of Ungentlemanly Warfare confused for like 5 minutes, and that's the one that I want to see. So Argyle will continue to sit unwatched on Apple TV. But that brings us to the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
Can I go back and pause real quick? I think the part, Gerald, that I meant to add, and I won't belabor this any further. The name that drew me in, this is Matthew Vaughn directs, is the guy who created The Kingsman, which I think is a great series. He produced Lock, Stock, and Smoking Barrels, Snatch, Layer Cake, Kick-Ass, X-Men First Class. Like, the guy's got a pretty solid resume. So, again, when you think like, ooh, on paper, sure. But anyway, sorry. Meant to add that and didn't mean to leave it out. One thing that I will hit on, and I won't go too deep because everyone has done it this week.
It's, you mentioned Stardust, by the way, with Matthew Vaughn, because you should have.
I didn't, and I don't know that I've ever seen it.
Stardust is so good. It is like, if you like the Princess Bride vibes, Stardust is your jam.
Okay. I have not seen it. I may have to check that out. So we get an additional bonus Godzillatron, but I will bang the drum here. I will get to it. I promise. I'll just leave it here, folks. Everyone has had their thoughts this week since the Saturday Arch Manning coming out show. People have found very few ways to make it anti-Arch, because you can't. He was flawless. They found ways to make it about Quinn being bad or the defense being bad or controversy is brewing or whatever it is. Like, I just want to put the period on this. When he arrived and everyone said, oh, he's a 3-star except for his last name, Gerald and I said, no, he's different. You can't really grade him the way you do other people. When he arrived and the click machine immediately started and said, well, he's going to transfer. Everyone knows that, obviously. If Quinn's the starter, he's gone. And Gerald and I said, no, he's different. And we have multiple times on this podcast said Arch is a singular player, honestly, college football player. There aren't comps to him. Like, Bronny James might be the closest in that much hype. And again, you're talking one generation. This is multi-generational at a position that, like, requires technique as well as talent. And he has obviously the natural God-given talent plus the best coaching and technique that you will ever be exposed to. And the motivations for him are very different than every other 18, 19, 20-year-old. So when we said he's different, this is what we meant. And what we hope is that, you know, people, what Gerald and I would hope, is that people just kind of relax after this and say, huh, we've got a good quarterback. And, huh, he wants to play at Texas and he's willing to wait, but we know he's going to be good when he gets here. I don't think that will happen, as evidenced by this week, but that is the takeaway that everyone should be having. Arch Manning, he will get the clicks, so people will keep using it, but the story on Arch. Tell all your friends, in case anyone asks. There isn't a quarterback controversy. There's three, honestly, really good quarterbacks, but there's two elite quarterbacks who were, admittedly, the two highest-rated quarterbacks at one time ever in the history of high school football. Yes, they are still sitting behind each other, and yes, it looks like it's going to work out. Quinn will hopefully go hit his 4,000-yard season, stay healthy, win a Heisman, and leave. If for some reason the trajectory that Quinn's career has taken where he's gotten hurt a little bit happens, you have an Arch Manning who's ready to go this year, and you still don't have to sacrifice the goals that Sark and this team have. It's a win-win. We don't need to make this anything other than a good thing.
This is how we used to operate. This is how college football used to be. People like forgot how life existed for several years, and that's, I mean, this was what it was before. Like, you had your guy and you had your next guy, and Texas is in a very enviable position right now. I'm banging the drum this week quickly on Adonai Mitchell. The NFL draft is right around the corner. If you don't know the story, Adonai Mitchell was a Georgia Bulldog and then transferred to the University of Texas for one season to get a little bit closer to home. The Missouri City native wanted to get closer to his daughter, and that's part of the reason why he ended up at Texas. And I'm just saying, he recently, the Players Tribune, if you don't read the articles from the Players Tribune, you're missing out. But he talked about his journey and his relationship with his daughter on the Players Tribune, and he wrote a letter to her the day he declared for the NFL draft. And let me just say, I'm an easy cry, so I don't anticipate everybody crying, but if you've got kids, it is something that you are going to want to read, and it'll probably get you in the right spots. So check it out. Again, that's the kind of guy that you want on your team. That's the kind of guy that Texas attracts, that the culture here attracts those kind of guys who have their head on right, who have their head on their shoulders correctly. And I'm glad to see it. But again, Adonai Mitchell, we were going to cheer for you because you are a Longhorn. But I'm going to cheer for you doubly because of who you are as a person and the kind of guy you want to be. As a dad, man, big ups, like sacrificing for your kids. I get it, man. We are excited for you and hope the world works out for you. That's all I've got for you this week. Kyle, where can people find you on the internet?
You can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carbon. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
Follow me on Twitter at GH Goodrich. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook, Instagram, Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. I'll be back next week. And until then, hook 'em.
Hook 'em.